We are in the epilogue section of the Sermon on the Mount. And at this point, I feel confident enough to say that I see an end in sight. So I believe this will be an 18-part series on the Sermon on the Mount. And tonight is part 16. So I believe two more lessons will do it for us. But we are here in Matthew 7, verses 15 through 20. And the last time that we were in the Sermon on the Mount, we talked about the idea of this epilogue, that the main body of the sermon reaches its pinnacle in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 12, where Jesus says, "So whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets." And that statement, "this is the law and the prophets," forms what is known as an inclusio with chapter 5, in verse 17, where Jesus says, "Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them." And so the Sermon on the Mount has an introduction in Matthew chapter 5, verses 1 to 16, and it has a conclusion here at, or the main body of it is in 5:17 to 7:12. And then there is like an epilogue section in 7:13 to the end of the chapter. And as we pointed out before, the epilogue is just as important as the main body of the sermon because it's in the epilogue where the sermon gets personal. Like any good preacher, Jesus is taking the points that he's laid out and he is pressing them onto his audience. And he's encouraging his listeners to make a choice. And so last time, we talked about choosing the narrow gate over the wide gate, and this time, we will be talking about choosing good trees over bad trees. And so let's read Matthew 7, verses 15 through 20. Jesus says, "Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. You will recognize them by their fruits. Are grapes gathered from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? So every healthy tree bears good fruit, but the diseased tree bears bad fruit. A healthy tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a diseased tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Thus you will recognize them by their fruits." Now, for all of the warnings in the Sermon on the Mount, this is only the second time that Jesus uses the word beware. The first time was in chapter 6 in verse 1. And that was where he began his warnings about hypocrisy. Beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be seen by them. And now this is the second time in chapter 7 in verse 15. Beware of false prophets. And so the first beware is about internal threats. It's about a hypocrisy that we might be guilty of within ourselves. But the second beware is about external threats. It's about those who would come to you and derail your faith. And so what I'd like to do is look at this text and make three observations this afternoon. And they're very simple. The three lessons from this text are that false prophets will come, false prophets will be dangerous, and false prophets can be recognized. False prophets will come, they will be dangerous, but they can be recognized. So first, false prophets will come. Notice that Jesus says here in verse 15, "Beware of false prophets who come to you." He doesn't say, "Beware of false prophets who may come to you, or could come to you, or might come to you." He fully expected that his disciples would encounter false messengers, and they would need to know how to deal with them. He warned about false prophets and false teachers and even false Christ in the Olivet Discourse in Matthew chapter 24. And in fact, even in his day, even before he was gone, there were false teachers and false prophets. And Jesus is underscoring that here in this great sermon. You know, Paul gives a very similar warning to the Ephesian elders in Acts chapter 20. In Acts 20, many years later, when Paul's on his third missionary journey and he's on his way to Jerusalem for what he believes is the final time and the last time that he thinks that he will see these men, he warns them of the same things that Jesus warns us of in the Sermon on the Mount. In Acts 20 and verse 28, he says, "Pay careful attention to yourselves and to all the flock in which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers, to care for the church of God which he obtained with his own blood. I know that after my departure, fierce wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock. And from among your own selves will arise men speaking twisted things to draw away the disciples after them." And so, like Jesus, Paul understood that false teaching is a reality that the Lord's people will be confronted with, and they will need to know how to deal with it so that they're not taken victim by it. And today, I think that threat is more real than ever before. There are so many people around us who would use the cause of Christ for their own personal benefit, to amass their own personal following, to gain some level of trust with people in order to manipulate them for their own purposes. The amount of nonsense on YouTube alone is staggering. More and more, I encounter people who I start to talk with and study with, and just the amount of misinformation that you can come across by people who seem very sure of themselves can be very detrimental to your faith. It's happening online. It's happening in church buildings. It's happening in politics. False prophets pander to Christians in order to take advantage of them. They will want you to think that they have noble goals. They will espouse Christian morals and family values. But then they will say some twisted things too. They will be wolves wearing sheep's clothing. And unless we use some discernment, then we won't be able to recognize them for what they are. And besides all of that, Jesus says, "Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves." Paul even takes it a step further. He says here in verse 30 that some of these wolves will arise from among your own selves. And so there's reason for us to be on guard. There's reason for us to take this threat seriously. Some false prophets will be people who you thought that you could trust. It wouldn't be a very effective false teacher who walks in to our assembly or any other with a name tag that says false prophet. That would be working against his goals there. And so a false prophet is somebody who seems trustworthy, somebody who might come with good references or who has been faithful in the past. And it's for those reasons that false prophets will be dangerous. That's the second point. False prophets will be dangerous. You know, there's only one reason why a ravenous wolf comes to a flock of sheep. And it's not for friendship. When a ravenous wolf, a hungry wolf, comes to a flock of sheep, he sees them as something that he can consume. He sees food. He sees an opportunity. And Paul warned these Ephesian elders that the false teacher's aim would be to draw away the disciples after them. See, these are people who don't really care about cultivating faithfulness to Jesus. They're not really that concerned about people being dedicated to him. Really, what they want is people dedicated to them. And so these are people whose ultimate concern is really for themselves. They won't be motivated by a hope to nurture their followers, but to consume them. And it wasn't just Jesus, and it wasn't just Paul who talked like this. Peter also warned about false teachers. In 2 Peter chapter 2, 2 Peter chapter 2 and in verse 1, he says, "But false prophets also arose among the people, just as there will be false teachers among you, who will secretly bring in destructive heresies, even denying the master who bought them, bringing upon themselves swift destruction. And many will follow their sensuality, and because of them, the way of truth will be blasphemed. And in their greed, they will exploit you with false words." And so here again, you can see the real danger of these false prophets and these false teachers. It's not only that they are deceitful, but they are skilled in their deceitfulness. I would imagine that if you were a shepherd and you knew that there were wolves in the territory where you were keeping sheep, yeah, that would, you know, raise some concern for you. You'd be on your guard. But I don't know of any shepherd that has to deal with wolves who put on sheep costumes. Those would be some very skillful wolves. That would demonstrate some real ingenuity for a wolf to put on a sheep disguise. And that's the kind of threat that Jesus is talking about. Peter here warns about false teachers among you who will secretly bring in destructive heresies. He says many will follow them. And the result in verse 3 is that in their greed, they will exploit you with false words. And so false teachers are like ravenous wolves because they're willing to sacrifice the welfare of the sheep in order to fill their own bellies. They're willing to sacrifice even the lives of the sheep for themselves. They'll say whatever might be popular in order to amass a following. They'll say whatever is most advantageous to their position or to their bank accounts. And that's because their loyalty is not to the Lord. It's not to his word, but it is to themselves. And so instead of serving the Lord's people, false teachers will simply use them and manipulate them. I'll show you one more place that I think makes these points for us. In 2 Corinthians chapter 11. Here in 2 Corinthians 11, Paul is discussing his concerns for the Corinthian church. And he says here in verse 3, "I am afraid that as the serpent deceived Eve by his cunning, your thoughts will be led astray from a sincere and pure devotion to Christ. For if someone comes and proclaims another Jesus than the one we proclaimed, or if you receive a different spirit from the one you received, or if you accept a different gospel from the one you accepted, you put up with it readily enough. Indeed, I consider that I am not in the least inferior to these super apostles." But then he says this about them down in verse 13. "For such men are false apostles, deceitful workmen, disguising themselves as apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. So it is no surprise if his servants also disguise themselves as servants of righteousness. Their end will correspond to their deeds." And so again, you see a lot of the same principles being taught here. False teachers will aim to deceive people for their own benefit. They will lead people away from a sincere and pure devotion to Christ. They will disguise themselves as servants of righteousness, and they will do it for their own selfish motives. So, it would be wise of us to be prepared for these things. So the first two points are that false prophets will come, and that false prophets will be dangerous. And it's because those first two points are true that the third point is really good news for us. And that is that false prophets can be recognized. Now, we ought to take this threat very seriously. I think that's been clear in everything that we've read and discussed so far. But we ought not be paranoid about it. There's a better way to handle the threat of false prophets than going around and interrogating every sheep you come across, yanking at its wool, seeing if it'll come off. Jesus is not teaching us to harass the sheep, but he is telling us to be on our guard for the ones that are disguised. But what he tells us is that the wolves will reveal themselves. The wolves will reveal themselves. It's not up to us to go around and see if the wool comes off. And this is where Jesus begins to shift metaphors. Two different times in this text, once in verse 16 and once in verse 20, Jesus says, "You will recognize them by their fruits." And again, that's really reassuring. That's really good news. We're not without tools or response for this danger. But think about what Jesus is saying. You will recognize them by their fruits. How hard is it to tell the difference between two different kinds of trees? Imagine that you had a lemon tree and a lime tree in front of you. How hard would it be to tell the difference between the two? Well, it depends. It depends on whether or not those trees have put out any fruit. Some of us might be able to tell the difference between an apple tree and an orange tree without fruit. I'm not sure that I could. But I'm certain I would not be able to tell the difference between a lemon tree and a lime tree unless the fruit came out. And really, until the fruit became ripe, because I'm pretty sure lemons are green until they turn yellow. So, you know, once the fruit comes out and once the fruit is mature, then it becomes quite obvious which one is a lemon tree and which one is a lime tree. And the point that Jesus is making is that eventually people will show their true colors. Eventually, people will reveal who they truly are. But we have to be patient sometimes, and we have to be discerning about what we see. So, practical point here. I think this does mean that we can afford to give people the benefit of the doubt. We don't have to be suspicious of every single person that we come across and have a policy of somebody is guilty until proven innocent. Love hopes all things. Love hopes all things. And so when we come across somebody who professes faith in Jesus, when we come across somebody who claims to be a Christian, we should give them the benefit of the doubt. If we love people, we'll hope that they're genuine and sincere and willing to submit their minds and their hearts to the will of God. That when they see what God has said, that they'll be willing to accept it. But we'll also recognize wolves when the seams on people's costumes start to show. The tree will become known by its fruit. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 10 and verse 16, "Behold, I am sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. So be wise as serpents and harmless as doves." Wisdom and gentleness. That's the way to deal with the threat of the wolves. So how do we recognize false teachers? How do we make wise judgments? What is the fruit that we ought to be looking for? Well, I'll suggest that it comes down to two things. It comes down to their teaching and their character. Their teaching and their character. First, I want to show you where John talks about the teaching test, the doctrine test, in 1 John chapter 4. In 1 John chapter 4, beginning in verse 1, he says, "Beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits to see whether they are from God. For many false prophets have gone out into the world. By this you know the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesses that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is from God. And every spirit that does not confess Jesus is not from God. This is the spirit of the Antichrist, which you heard was coming and now is in the world already. Little children, you are from God and have overcome them, for he who is in you is greater than he who is in the world. They are from the world, therefore they speak from the world, and the world listens to them. We are from God. Whoever knows God listens to us. Whoever is not from God does not listen to us. By this we know the spirit of truth and the spirit of error. Okay, so John is talking in very practical terms to people who might be concerned about recognizing false teachers when they come across them. And John's point is actually very simple. He's saying, of course, you can't just believe every spirit naively. You can't just accept every message from every messenger. If you do that, you're going to let a bunch of nonsense in, and you're not going to be able to parse out the differences. You can't just blindly follow whoever says that you ought to follow them. You have to test the spirits to see whether they are from God. And the way you do that is you take what somebody says, and then you compare it with what you know to be true from the Word of God. I don't think that John is saying that everybody who literally confesses that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh has, like, given you the secret password, and then you know that everything else they say is true. But this was the particular issue among these people at this time. There were false teachers who were going around and saying, actually, Jesus didn't come in the flesh. And John says, if somebody says that, then you ought to be able to know that they're not telling you the truth. God has already clearly revealed that Jesus came in the flesh. And so if somebody comes along saying something different than what God has revealed, then you can recognize them as a false teacher. Now, there are some people who might listen to them. In fact, there might be a lot of people who listen to them. Verse 5 says, they are from the world, therefore they speak from the world, and the world listens to them. But verse 6 says, we are from God. Whoever knows God listens to us. That is the apostles, I believe. Whoever is not from God does not listen to us. And it is by this that we can know the spirit of truth and the spirit of error. And so, the way that you can discern a false teacher is simply by comparing what they say with the Word of God. If somebody says something that's different from what God has revealed through his apostles and prophets in the written word, then you can know that they're not telling you the truth. That's the first test. But the second test is the character test. False teachers will not be godly people. Sometimes ungodly people teach the truth, but false teachers will be incapable of living truly godly lives. And here's why. That's because being a Christian isn't simply a matter of doing something new. It's about being something new. And so the people who most consistently live the truth in their lives will be the people who you can trust to most consistently speak the truth also. Isn't that the point with the different kinds of trees and the different kinds of animals? It's about what grows organically. I suppose that you could tie some grapes onto a thorn bush. You go out there with some yarn and maybe some tweezers. You could tie grapes onto a thorn bush. You could attach wool to a wolf. But the grapes will never grow there. The wool will never grow there. Only a grapevine can produce grapes. Only a sheep can produce wool. Jesus said, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And wasn't that his point in chapter 5 as he talked about a variety of different sins? He talked about anger, and he talked about lust, and he talked about greed, and he talked about dishonesty. And over again, he keeps showing us that all of these sins start in the heart. And because that's true, it's in the heart and from the heart that a new kind of fruit must grow. I love the way that Paul Earnhardt wrote about this. I've referenced his book a couple of times in this series. But Paul Earnhardt wrote, "It is because of the inner nature of true godliness that the testing of teachers and of disciples generally must always be a search beneath the skin. There is a righteousness and a piety that arises not from a humble faith in the Son of God, but from pride and the desire for moral and spiritual excellence. The subtle but unconcealable flaw of this kind of spirituality is the utter absence in it of the qualities of the Beatitudes. The meekness, compassion, and selflessness, the godly sorrow for sin. There will also be about this attractive religious patina an inability to produce the fruit of the Spirit. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control." To be able to trust that somebody is speaking the truth, we ought to be able to see that they are living the truth. John also wrote about the character test. Here in 1 John 4, he talks about the teaching test, the doctrinal test of the fruit. But in chapter 3, he talks about the character test. He says in verse 6, "No one who abides in him keeps on sinning. No one who keeps on sinning has either seen him or known him. Little children, let no one deceive you. Whoever practices righteousness is righteous, as he is righteous. Whoever makes a practice of sinning is of the devil, for the devil has been sinning from the beginning. The reason the Son of God appeared was to destroy the works of the devil. No one born of God makes a practice of sinning, for God's seed abides in him, and he cannot keep on sinning, because he has been born of God. By this it is evident who are the children of God and who are the children of the devil. Whoever does not practice righteousness is not of God, nor is the one who does not love his brother." Let me hasten to say, none of us are perfect. That's not the point here. John isn't talking about the kind of person who sins and then recognizes their sin and then lives in a constant state of repentance and an earnest desire to conform their life to the character of the Son of God. He's talking about the kind of person who is content to just live in sin, to go on sinning, to make a practice of sinning. And when you really get to know somebody, when you get close enough to somebody, when you spend enough time around somebody, you can normally tell the difference between the two, can't you? You can tell the difference between somebody who is earnest and sincere and doing their very best to follow the Lord and somebody who is all too eager to make compromises. And what John is saying is that if somebody is willing to make compromises in how they live, then you ought to expect they're willing to make compromises in what they teach also. And so, we ought to be able to recognize false teachers by both their teaching and their character. Now, here's a practical question. Is there a difference between someone who is a false teacher and someone who we might have some disagreements with? In other words, does somebody have to align with you on every single point of interpretation in order for you to accept them as a sheep instead of a wolf? Well, if that were the case, there'd be no reason for chapters like Romans 14 that tell us how to be patient with each other when there's differences in judgment. I heard a story one time about a brother who was frustrated, and he made a list of about 20 different controversial issues. And you could probably think of what a handful of those would be, but he listed out about 20 different controversial issues, and he wrote out his position on every one of these nuanced points. And then he declared, "I have studied every one of these issues, and I can't find anybody but me who's right about every single one of them." Is that the attitude Jesus wants us to have? I don't think so. I'll be honest with you. I don't know where to draw the lines on every single question. But I think that there are some issues that are more clear than others. And I think there are some issues that are more weighty than others. And any time that we are willing to compromise the truth, we also compromise our character. And the greater the first compromise, the greater the second will be. The false teachers that the New Testament constantly warns against are people who are deceitfully compromising clear and weighty principles of the gospel in order to serve themselves. And so we need to make sure that we avoid following people like that or becoming people like that ourselves. I'll close with 1 John chapter 2, verses 3 through 6. John writes, "And by this we know that we have come to know him, if we keep his commandments. Whoever says, 'I know him,' but does not keep his commandments, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. But whoever keeps his word, in him truly the love of God is perfected. By this we may know that we are in him. Whoever says he abides in him ought to walk in the same way in which he walked." People who love Jesus will keep his commandments. That much is clear. We ought to be satisfied with nothing less than doing everything the Lord wants us to do just as perfectly and exactly as he wants us to do it. And we ought to have the discernment to listen to teachers who will encourage us to make that our constant aim. Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. You will recognize them by their fruits. There may be somebody here who needs to respond to the invitation of the gospel. Jesus warns about false prophets, but Jesus is the prophet of prophets. He is the one who has revealed to us the will of God more perfectly, more clearly than anybody before or after him. He is the way, the truth, and the life. And if you want to go to the Father, the invitation is that you go through him. If you need to make your life right with God, you can come to the front and let us know while we stand and sing.